The hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives that for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are on Wednesday afternoon, the Allstate Skyline Studio. Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in on this gloomy day. Frank Senna will be here a little bit later. Right now, Governor Pritzker is giving his first budget address. I think the deficit they're talking about is $3 billion, something like that. So he will be talking about how he's going to try to deliver on a lot of what he's promised with less money than he thought. So we will talk to Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business about that a little bit later. Big development in the Lincoln Yards program as well yesterday, and there's another key vote for that project tomorrow. So we'll kick that around with Frank, and then we'll talk travel a little bit in the last segment of the show with the folks from Expedia. Is there really a one day that's better than the others to buy your airline tickets? Terry Savage buys a lot of airline tickets. What's the answer?
The answer is you just got to keep hunting for bargains, just like in the stock market. You never know until it's over. But that's what makes it interesting.
When you're buying a flight, how much time do you put into it?
Well, I generally know when I have to travel. I'm going to give a speech, and I've got to get there sometime on a Thursday morning and fly back Friday afternoon or something like that. So I don't have that flexibility. I know my son and his family are hunting still to better their vacation tickets. So it just depends on how much time you have to put into it.
That's another thing I want to ask them, actually, because they say that sometimes longer vacations are more affordable, cheaper in the long run than shorter vacations when it comes to flights. So we'll talk about that in the second half hour.
I'm going to listen to Frank.
Basically, we're just killing time, right, because we're waiting to see what the Fed has to say. I don't know if you saw this, Terry, but a lot of times there are, like the Fed reports, it's not unusual for there to be an embargoed release of some of these reports. So reporters who cover it get an early look. They can write their stories. So right at 1 o'clock, when the report is released, the stories hit the wires because reporters had gotten a heads up on it. It's all done under tight controls.
Is that the case on the Fed minutes, though? I didn't know that the Fed minutes will be released early. I think that's such a critical issue.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm reading today that they didn't get the look today because of a snowstorm in Washington. So apparently routinely they do.
Okay, so no wonder the market's doing absolutely nothing, because it's not so much as the Fed. Everyone says, well, the Fed, are they going to raise rates? No. If it made it pretty clear, they're not going to raise rates. But what we're going to get today is the minutes of the last meeting. And after the last meeting, the Fed chairman said, we're not going to be so doctrinaire about raising rates. We had thought we were going to do it, but we're looking at the data, and it's not just raising rates. But remember, they bought all those bonds, mortgages, government bonds, but lots of mortgages and other securities back a decade ago to put money into the economy because, the Fed pays for it and just sends money into the banking system when it pays. Nobody asks them to is the check good? It's just new money. And lately, those securities have been maturing. Mortgages get paid off and so forth. So that's lowered their balance sheet, the amount of securities they have. And they've been selling some of the stuff they own on a regular basis, about $5 billion a month. And the Fed chairman said, no, we're not going to do that either. We're not going to be sucking money out of the economy either.
And Wall Street loved,
not too much.
Wall Street loved what came out of the Fed last month, right?
Oh, yeah. Wall Street loved the idea that the Fed's not going to interfere. It sees a little weakness in the economy. It's going to keep money flowing into the economy. It's not going to be sucking it out the way it planned to. Not thinking about raising rates. That was the analysis of what the Fed chairman said. Today, we get the minutes of that meeting where they discussed all those things. And the market's kind of betting that the Fed chairman didn't mislead us, that the Fed's going to be easier on the money supply. And so you have a couple of things happening. The dollar is weakened a little because there's not so much fear of a global slowdown. And as a possibility that there could be room for inflation increases, you've seen gold rise sharply in the last couple of days.
Yeah, you were all over gold today. What's going on there?
Well, I wrote that column, what was it, about 2 months ago, maybe three now, talking about gold. That's the commodity that's been pretty unheralded, unsung. And gold price, then it was $1,290. It's now today 1345. So it's at its highest levels since a few years back. And that's not so much because of the U.S. or fears of inflation here, but a lot of it's what's going on in Europe, Brexit, how Europe's going to deal with its own slowing economy. Will they pump money in? So what we're seeing now is the global investment world waiting to see, will growth resume? Will interest rates be low in the U.S.? In Europe, there was a big story in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. A huge percentage of the debt there carries negative interest rates. People are paying the banks money to hold, paying the banks to keep hold their money, negative interest rates.
Right.
So there's a lot of uncertainty around the world now, and you're seeing that as the markets dance around going basically nowhere. The Fed minutes coming up just after we get off the air will be part of what determines how the world turns.
The column up earlier this week has to do with dealing with student loan debt, $1.5 trillion around the country. And, you know, when you graduate from college, it comes time to pay. And, you know, Terry, we're doing that. I mean, my daughter graduated from Dayton last year, and it's one of those things where, you know, okay, we're borrowing. All of a sudden, it's time to start paying,
yeah.
And sometimes you don't look into that as much as you do as to how to borrow money.
Exactly, and that comes as a surprise, not to you, of course. And you co-signed, didn't you, for the private student loans?
Yeah, the Parents Plus, some of it, yeah.
The Parents Plus. So, okay, that's the most expensive loan in the world. You've got to get that paid off. Look, I've written 2 weeks in a row on student loans. Last week's one was about this company, tuition.io, that helps corporations set up programs to pay off student loans or contribute to student loan payments for their employees. And then I was flooded with so many questions about, oh, gosh, what do I do, the questions from parents like you, that I decided to write another column, which I just posted at terrysavage.com, sort of a guide, because what we see is there's just no way really to escape student loan debt. Federal student loans, which students take out, go on and live with you, and parents, plus loans, too. You can't default on those through bankruptcies. Those are federal loans, and they're now garnishing Social Security benefits of seniors who've signed for their kids' loans or maybe for their own education. Private student loans is slightly different, but it's a huge burden, and only, you know, in extreme circumstances can you go bankrupt on those loans. At that point, you're putting your whole retirement and your home and everything else, if you're a parent, on the line. So this is a big problem for America, not only for the students, for the parents, and for the economy.
All right, so what do you do if you're sitting on Parent Plus loans? Because that's probably the majority of our listeners, or that would be the situation they're facing.
Exactly, or private loans. Okay, so there are about a dozen links in this column, the one to studentaid.ed.gov, which will show you all your federal loans, including PLUS loans. So you need to know what they are. You need to know some of the alternatives for paying them off. Parents don't get those in PLUS loans. Students have some benefits, and before you do anything with your student loans, you want to look at income-based repayment plans, if necessary, deferments. I also talk a lot about the teacher programs in here. People have heard about these, or public service loan forgiveness plans. There is a link, because this is a very complicated subject with lots of details, and it requires making 120 on-time payments, plus a lot of other things. It depends if your employer is qualified to get you payoff. If you paid 120 payments, you've probably essentially paid off your student loans, but you want to read about that. Now, parents. You can refinance a loan at a place like SoFi.com. The student can. At Credible.com, you can get competitive offers for refinancing both private loans that students take out, typically with their parents' signatures, or PLUS loans. A reminder, we used to take out a home equity loan because the interest was deductible and lower than on a PLUS loan.
You can't do that anymore.
But now you can't deduct it anymore. Okay.
And so you said that the PLUS loans, the lenders don't have a lot of incentive to allow for refinancing, right? Because they've got a great interest rate.
Well, private loan.
Right.
Private loans. The lenders have a great deal. I mean, it's very, you know, they can go after you. They can garnish your wages if you're the parent that co-signed for one of those loans. There's you have, you know, a real liability. It's not like your kid doesn't get a job and isn't paying so tough. They'll figure it out. If you've co-signed a loan, then really, you know, they could get a judgment against you and lien your home. They could garnish your wages. And some student lenders are doing that. Others, private lenders, are making deals. It is worth asking. about making a deal on private loans, but they don't have a big incentive to do that. So the best you can probably do, if you're a parent, you're putting your credit on the line, refinance to a lower rate, plus loans carry the highest rates. But it's something that you have to be proactive about, so I've listed a bunch of resources.
Check it out. It's at terrysavage.com. All right, Terry, thank you for joining us today. We'll talk again next week.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much, Jen DeSalvo. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Hundreds of flights canceled at O'Hare today because of the lousy weather. But it's coming up on spring break time, right? I'm actually going to take a trip to Mexico in a few weeks to do some work down there. And we're going to talk about when you should buy your airline tickets, if there's a day of the week that's best, or the length of stay that's best, things like that. Expedia, of course, is in the travel business, and they say they've got some numbers to share, so they'll share them with us a little bit later in the program. But right now, Frank Sennett is on a phone line from Crane Chicago Business, joins us on most Wednesday afternoons. And Frank, I know I pulled you away from the TV as you were watching Governor Pritzker deliver his State of the Budget address, so I appreciate you joining us here this afternoon.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me, Steve. It is news as it breaks, right?
Are you watching the address or not? I mean, I've got it up on my TV here.
I am not watching the address, but I'm just reading Greg Hines' story on the spending plan. So, yeah.
What do you hear from it? I mean, I know that he's facing, you know, a new governor comes in. He says the situation was worse than he thought. I mean, it's a typical thing, right? He says the deficit was worse than Rauner had let on. And so he's sort of trying to soften, I would imagine, some of the things he's planning to do or some of the things he's not going to be able to do.
Yeah, so this is kind of a bridge budget proposal, a bridge to a stable fiscal future is how he terms it in the speech. You know, the big thing is he is standing by the campaign push for a graduated income tax. He calls that a fair tax. That's going to require the legislature to approve the plan and then voters to ratify it in a referendum in 2020, if that is to take place. So, you know, in the meantime, you know, he says he's going to close a $3.2 billion budget gap through a combination of taxes on items such as legalized marijuana sales and sports betting, a delay in making some pension payments, where have we heard that one before?
Right.
And a slower increase in spending than you know, some on the progressive end of the spectrum have wanted.
But even if he's going to do sports betting and marijuana, and they always go together,
that's right.
That, you know, those two things aren't up and running yet, right? I mean, we're not going to get any revenue from marijuana sales or sports betting this year. Maybe sports betting if they could turn something around in the spring.
Yeah, and there's also the new assessment on Medicaid providers that will be doubled with a federal match, combined with those other things, that we have $1.1 billion in new revenue, according to this plan, and spending will go up, particularly for education. Well, that's in line for $630 million in additional funding to be divided among grade and high schools, colleges and universities, and early childhood programs. But then there will be trims, $800 million reduction in the state's expected payments to worker pension systems, chiefly among them. So that will extend the ramp for full funding by another 7 years to 2052.
Wow.
So we're, you know, kicking that can.
Well, it's a can that's been kicked. All right, so we'll certainly hear a lot more about that through the day as Governor Pritzker continues talking. Okay, the Lincoln Yards Project is something that we discuss a lot on this show. It's going to be along the Chicago River, like Clybourne, Elston, Webster, in that area. And the Community Development Commission, I think it was just yesterday, approved this TIF district that will allow them to get a rebate on their property taxes in some ways, a rebate on money that they're spending to improve infrastructure. Explain that for me and tell me what's next for Lincoln Yards.
Yeah, so this is a 168-acre TIF district. It was unanimously approved, and that means that the developer can, with TIF-eligible projects, get money from tax receipts, property tax receipts, in the district. There are $900 million estimated in TIF of eligible projects within the district, and that's been a number that's been talked about. But a big headline from yesterday, Cranes found that there's an additional $400 million in financing costs that Sterling Bay and any other future developers would pay to finance those projects. That also comes out of property tax gains in that TIF fund. So it would be $1.3 billion overall, so significantly higher overall price tag of those TIF funds.
And those are property tax dollars that Sterling Bay is not paying. But if it's done above the board, and I'm not always clear on this, but if it's done correctly, right, that is money that they are paying to build bridges over the Chicago River and things like that.
Yeah, infrastructure improvements. Okay. The $490 million first phase would include $160 million for new vehicular bridges at Armitage, Dominick Street, and Concord Place, $110 million for reconfiguring the Elston, Armitage, and Ashland intersection, and $96 million for new roads and utilities, according to the TIF budget. So there's a lot of infrastructure improvement. That's what that money is earmarked for.
And I know it's got facing another vote tomorrow from another group. And then when we talk next Wednesday, the city council may well have approved it. I think the council meeting next Wednesday could take it up then, correctly? Am I correct?
It seems to be on a pretty fast track. Yeah. There have been some voices saying, let's wait till a new mayor comes in. But it appears the train is chugging out of the station.
All right, listen, I need Ken Griffin's email because I could use $1 million.
Couldn't we both? Yeah. Bill Daley must have it.
Yeah, he must, because Griffin has already given Daley's campaign $1 million. And then Greg Hines and Cranes reported a few days ago, I think, that there was another $1 million in the pipeline. And then yesterday talked to Bill Daley. Bill Daley said, yep, I got $1 million coming from Ken Griffin. Griffin, of course, is the billionaire behind Citadel. He certainly got the money to give. And this will help the Daley offset an anti-Daley campaign that's being paid for by a local union.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Daley told Greg Hines, I didn't expect this. After the first $1 million to get the second million, the two had agreed to talk about further help from Griffin in a runoff potential, but getting it beforehand apparently is tied to an independent expenditure committee that launched the $715,000 anti-Daley TV blitz. So Daley said he believes that buy figured in Griffin's decision to give more up front to kind of combat that messaging. So a lot of media outlets reaping some rewards from that, I'm sure.
That's right. Okay.
We're going to get those millions ourselves.
I guess it's a trickle-down. It's a trickle-down million for us, Frank. That's the way it works.
Yeah.
Read more.
So he's over $8 million right now, Daley.
Not too bad. Read more at chicagobusiness.com. Frank Sennett, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. I probably don't need to tell you this, but electronics can get very confusing if you're not in the depths of what that world is all about. Like, did you know that diamonds are involved in tech these days? Diamonds are forever. All right, bring it back. The Chicago company Acon Semiconductor is creating lab-grown diamonds to use in various tech, like sensor windows and making technology thinner. But another cool thing about them is that their developments are being used by the U.S. Army because of their durability. Diamonds are forever. I said, reel it in. Just another example of outside-the-box thinking and what puts Chicago on the map. And speaking of Chicago and Illinois, Governor Pritzker signed a bill to raise the minimum wage $1 next year to $9.25 an hour. It's the next step in reaching the $15 per hour by 2025 goal. But as always, big changes like this spur much larger conversations, like when will automation just be cheaper? And if that's the case, how many people will they put out of work?
Hello, I'm here to replace you.
I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Ori and Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank on 720 WGN. All right, are you making your plans for spring break or maybe summer vacation? On a phone line now is Expedia Group travel expert Victoria Calliero, who has been looking over some of the numbers, some of the flight data. Victoria, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Expedia and the Airline Reporting Corporation, right? You guys have been pouring over numbers from the past year or so, is that right?
That's right. And in fact, this is the fifth year in a row in which we're coming out with this report.
What jumped out at you in this report?
Well, one thing we know for sure is that timing matters. So airlines and hotels sometimes offer different pricing in order to help spur demand. So everything from how far out you book to the day of the week you book and travel can affect the price that you're paying when you're booking your travel.
Okay, so is it better to book far in advance, or it might be better to book last minute?
So to unlock the biggest flight savings, you should make sure that you book your flights at least 3 weeks out, so okay. 3 weeks ahead of your departure date. You can save an additional 20% or more on flight costs just by booking on a weekend. So that's hitting by now on a Saturday or Sunday, you're destined to get more savings.
So if you leave, because then also, I had heard that you should stay over a Saturday or something like that. Is there anything to that?
That's exactly right. Okay. With hotel stays, we recommend you stay a Saturday night because, you know, no one really wants you leaving on a Saturday and having to fill a Saturday night stay.
Right. Okay, and is there a best day to book?
So for hotels, the best day to book, or the cheapest day, if you will, is Friday. So make sure you hit book on a Friday. And then if you're traveling, the best day to start your journey would be a Thursday or Friday.
Okay,
well.
So I might be confusing myself with my question. So if you're flying, if you're taking off on a trip, it's better to leave on a Thursday because Friday's probably higher demand, right? And Thursday you would get a better deal. But as far as the day of the week to actually physically buy your ticket,
yes.
Is there a one day or some days that are better than other days?
Yep, the best day, the best 2 days are Saturday and Sunday, Sunday being the actual best date.
And why is that, Victoria?
You know, it's interesting because it does change, right? But that's just based on the 2018 data that we pulled in from the Airlines Reporting Corporation and Expedia Group.
So if you're going to buy airline tickets, go airline ticket shopping on Saturday or Sunday.
That's right.
And if you're going to leave on an airplane, leave on a Thursday rather than a Friday.
Thursday and a Friday are actually equally
just. Oh, really?
Justice.
Oh, Friday's not bad either. Okay.
No.
But you had said earlier, too, that maybe Saturdays were good. Are Saturdays okay?
So that's specifically about hotel stays, right?
Okay.
So what we're recommending is that if you book your trip and you're staying in a hotel, make sure that includes a Saturday night stay.
I got you. And as far as length of time that you're on a trip, obviously, the longer you're gone, the more expensive, I would think, right? But did your data show something else?
That's right. So it's actually not always the case. In fact, the majority of weekday trips we've found could have actually been cheaper if you just stayed the weekend. This is a common trend. I'm not sure if you've heard of bleisure, which is the combination of business and leisure.
Yeah.
It's actually something I love to do when I travel for work Monday through Friday. You just add an extra day to include, of course, that Saturday day, and you get to not only get a discount on your trip, but you get to spend a leisurely day in the destination.
And so you're telling me that if you add a day over the weekend, that you could end up overall paying less?
Yes. In fact, we found that the price discount could be as much as 25% off on airfares, yeah.
And so this is an airfare deal because they want you flying on Saturday because they don't have a lot of people flying on Saturday? I think with the airlines, there's not a lot of logic, but I'm grasping at trying to find some logic for this.
That's the thing, right? Travel's incredibly complex, and there is a lot of data and a lot of information out there. So the whole point of this report is to kind of crunch the numbers and do the hard work on the back end so customers can get the best deals.
Because logic might not be at play sometimes. What are the hot areas when it comes to travel this year?
So the hot areas are actually hot. I don't know about you, but I'm definitely ready for some warm weather destinations. It might come as no surprise that places like Los Angeles and Orlando are going to see a lot of visitors this spring and summer. People are obviously flocking to the theme parks. But our data also shows that Tampa, Fort Lauderdale, and Denver are popular for spring and summer trips as well. But I personally, like I said, want to talk about the beach.
Right.
So I'm happy to hear that Mexico is yet again a top trending destination for spring and summer travel.
Excellent. We'll be heading to Mexico in a few weeks. Victoria Caliero, Expedia Group Travel Expert. Nice to talk to you today. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.